UAL versus U.S. Bank Association, Mr. Barlient.
May it please the court, the underlying theme in United's position here and in the district court opinion below that the judgment of the bankruptcy court was not final reflects a fundamental misunderstanding of the bankruptcy process. That understanding is that in a bankruptcy case, after a claimant's right to payment has been fully determined on the merits of the claim, something else may happen in the case that will affect that determination so that the order deciding that right to payment, that claim in other words, is not final until that something else can no longer happen. That the premise on which that argument is based is simply false. Bankruptcy is fundamentally a process for the satisfaction of claims. Before a claim can be satisfied, it has to be fixed. In other words, the claimant's right to payment must be determined in a precise amount. Outside of bankruptcy, everybody understands that the process of determining the right to payment, that is, entering a judgment on the claim, is separate from the process of satisfying the judgment. This court made that point in the Wagner case.
Well, what are we talking about now, the finality issue?
That's correct. If the court has questions.
So is there anything that can happen that would is there something that would happen after our decision on the merits, if we reach the merits, that would affect the bank's entitlement was?
No, there isn't. What's the merits of this?
Is this the only issue in dispute? Whether UAL can disaffirm these three agreements on these three planes, the leases on these three planes? Is that what we're talking about?
The underlying issue arises from Section 1110 of the Bankruptcy Code, which is a special provision that affects aircraft. Under that section, United exercised its right, its unilateral right, to elect to perform the three leases and also to cure the default.
And now it wants to disaffirm the
leases. That's correct,
right?
And it has disaffirmed it.
And if that sticks, then is there any further area of dispute between the bank and UAL?
I'm trying to understand the court's question. With respect to the 1110 claim, if the judgment of the bankruptcy court is affirmed on the merits, there's nothing left. In point of fact...
Now, you want us to reverse on the merits.
That's correct.
Now, if we reverse on the merits, and that means that UAL owes this $5 million.
About $14 million in total.
$14 million. Different from five. So if we did that, would there be any further dispute over the amount?
Yeah, I think that's the real question that goes to finality, if I may, Your Honor. I think that's right. And I think the answer to that is no. Once that claim is fixed, it's fixed. The only thing that happens after that is a resolution of the question of how the claim is satisfied. Now, in this case, on the facts of this case, given the status of the bankruptcy estates, at least as of right now, what should happen is that the claims would simply be paid as administrative claims because at least, you know, as of now, the estates are solvent, administratively solvent estates. Let's step back from that and take the arguments that have been made as to what may happen in the future that would affect these claims. One thing they talk about is the formulation of a plan. Well, again, the plan is the mechanism by which the claims, once fixed, are satisfied. A plan cannot deal, as a matter of bankruptcy law, with individual claims. claims are treated in categories. This claim would be an administrative claim. It would be treated as an administrative claim. I will tell the court right now what the plan will say about administrative claims. The plan will say that administrative claims that haven't already been paid will be paid in full, in cash, at the effective date of the plan. There's nothing else the plan can say and be confirmable. With respect to other claims, with respect
well,
to
moving
other,
off from the finality then and on the merits, why now? So United Airlines obviously made a mistake. They missed these debts that they owed on these three airplanes. So you're trying to nail with their mistake, but and the court relieved them from their mistake. But why should they be stuck with the estate with the mistake?
Because
or put differently, you represent some creditors, and if you get this money, this $14 million, then other creditors are $14 million shy. So it's not as if United Airlines is going to be rewarded from being relieved from this mistake. It's other creditors who are going to benefit. So why should the people you represent obtain advantage over other creditors merely because of a mistake by United Airlines?
I want to define the advantage first. I definitely want to answer the question, but the advantage, of course, is getting the contract right. And there's nothing more than that. It's a contract right. And by advantage, I think what this court means and what the bankruptcy court meant is that other creditors who have contract rights won't get the same percentage, let's say, of those contract rights paid. That's, I think, what the court meant, and I think what this court means. The bankruptcy code has several, maybe many, provisions in it in which some creditors obtain a greater proportion of their claims than others. 1110 happens to be one of them.
But you're only what your claim comes down to in practical terms is that because this group of 20 people, you know, going through the contracts on a rush schedule, because they made a mistake, had committed an oversight, your clients get what amounts to a windfall, because if they hadn't made the mistake, you wouldn't have this claim to $14 million by way of administrative expense, priority claim.
The problem with that analysis is that in an operating Chapter 11 case, the debtor operates and the debtor makes agreements, not only under 1110, but under other provisions of the bankruptcy code. Section 365, they may assume an agreement. Section 363, they may use property of the estate and incur, or 364, excuse me, incur an administrative debt. All kinds of things happen in a bankruptcy case that result in some creditors being paid more than other creditors. What the court below did here is relieve United Airlines of what they claim to be a mistake in entering into an agreement unilaterally.
Right.
They
so,
made the decision.
So what? They're relieved of their mistake. As I say, it's not them. It's not United that's relieved. It's the other creditors.
Then where is the line?
What's wrong with that?
Because I'm unable to articulate a line that is drawn. And if there is no line,
if the bankrupt, this would be like the trustee, you know, bankrupt, debtor in possession. If the bankrupt makes a dumb mistake that gives a windfall to one group of creditors, the bankruptcy judge can undo it. The way we have general principles for, you know, if you pay someone pay a person. You owe a person $100, you accidentally write a check for $100,000, well, you can get that back. So why is this any different?
I think the facts are different, but let me... Let me answer that. The court below, the bankruptcy court, did not apply those standards. That's the difference, and that's the problem. We absolutely agree with Your Honor that the non-bankruptcy principles that would relieve a party from a mistake in a contract ought to apply here. We argue that. We argue, and not only do we argue that, The bankruptcy judge, in his opinion, pointed out that there are standards under which parties can...
Right, but it seems to me what really hurts you in that application of, you know, traditional standards for getting money paid back under mistake is that there was no prejudice to you. There was no harm to you as a result of the mistake. You didn't rely and give up some other, you know, valuable opportunity.
But I need to know what...
So that's why I call it a windfall.
I understand, and I'm getting into my rebuttal. But let me just say, I need to know, in order to fully address the court, where we are and what standards we're applying, and that's the problem I have with the bankruptcy court's opinion. The bankruptcy court relied on Rule 60, which applies to orders...
Well, I thought it's pretty simple. If you make a payment to someone by mistake, you're entitled to rescind it unless... By rescinding it, you would undercut the person who received it because he relied, he went out and bought something, he thought it was his, he had no reason to think he wasn't owed the money. So now it would be a hardship to him if he had to return it. Why isn't that the standard?
I think the standard with respect to a contract is stated in the bankruptcy court's opinion, and is something more than that,
why?
A greater showing, and I think the bankruptcy court at least said the standard should be a mutual mistake. But I think the point here, Your Honor, is bankruptcy court never applied that standard. That's the error.
It was a mutual mistake. I understand you. But what more is there to this standard than what I explained? If you make a mistake, pay someone too much, you can rescind, you can get the money back unless there's been detrimental reliance by the recipient, so that it would be hardship to him. I mean, obviously, if you make a mistake, you're not going to make the person you committed the mistake against bear the cost of it. But if there's no cost to him, just a windfall, he finds a wallet full of money and says, this is great, and then someone comes up and says, yes, but it's my wallet, I want it back. Then, the owner is entitled to it back. How is this different?
It's different because it's a contract. It's different because... because that's what Section 1110 says, and that's what the
Section
bankruptcy
court says. Section 1110 doesn't talk about mistake.
No, Your Honor...
So you said we should apply general, non-bankruptcy principles of mistake, of, rescission, unjust enrichment, and so on. But if we do that, it seems to me, United... The other creditors, that is to say, should get this money back.
I'm sorry if I said that. Maybe in responding to your question, I misled the court. What I meant to say is that what should have been applied here is the correct standard, which would be a standard applicable to contracts, which, in fact, that standard, in fact, was stated by the bankruptcy judge in his opinion. It is not the rescission standard, and the difference is this was not paying too much money. I got a bill for $100 and I paid $1,000. That's not what happened. What happened is that United Airlines made an agreement. The bankruptcy court found that. Made an agreement. It's a contract. And therefore, the standard that applies is a mistaken contract.
If you give a person a check, you owe a person $100, that's pursuant to contract. You give him $100,000, that's your mistake.
But the contract here, Your Honor, provided that United Airlines owed the trustees $14 million, or actually $6 million as of the time the contract was made, $6 million, another $8 million later. So the contract provided that United Airlines on February 7th, 2003, owed the trustees $6 million, not $100, $6 million. And they did not pay that $6 million. Now, if they want relief from that contract, sure, they can attempt to get relief from that contract based on the standards set forth in the bankruptcy judge's decision, but not based on Rule 60, because Rule 60,
what would the additional element of this standard be besides the
Your Honor, I need to go back and look at that, frankly. My recollection is that
it's the whole heart of the
mistake. Case. Well, no, Your Honor. I think the bankruptcy court never got into that inquiry. The bankruptcy court relied on Rule 60. And what
so
Your Honor is saying...
remand? You want a remand? Is that what you want?
Yes, we believe that Rule 60 should not have been applied here. And Your Honor's questions are supporting what we're saying, exactly what we're saying. This is not a Rule 60 issue. Rule 60 should never have been applied here. Nothing is wrong with the order. The bankruptcy judge didn't change the order. There's not a comma in the order that got modified by the Rule 60 order. What should happen if United Airlines wants relief from its contract, let them seek relief from their contract, but not from the order. That was an improper ruling.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Barlean.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Kieselstein? Mr. Kieselstein. Sorry.
May it please the Court. My name is Mark Kieselstein on behalf of UAL Corporation. The issue here of finality, I think, needs to be addressed because
understand that issue because if it's not if we don't decide whether United can rescind this agreement, whatever you want to call it, recover from its mistake, how would the parties be able to proceed without that knowledge?
Well, Your Honor, there are many quivers many arrows in the quiver of U.S. Bank. They have many additional theories to recover some of these same monies as they would assert under 1110A. I'd point you to the interim adequate protection stipulations in the record.
Well, Mr. Barlean said, no, this is the only dispute.
Well, I can tell you that they expressly reserve 365D10.
Well, he's given that up. He says there's only one dispute.
If Mr. Barlean is willing to renounce...
He's renounced it. He renounced it 10 minutes ago.
Then, Your Honor, I would say with respect to 1110A only, and there are still open issues...
He just said there were no open issues.
Well, then we'd also, just to be clear, there'd be a renunciation of a return condition claim under Section 1110A, which arises after the aircraft has been returned. There is a dispute or a potential dispute about whether returning the plane not in compliance with the contract would give rise to an administrative claim because of the 1110A election. That's an issue.
He said he's not going to raise any additional objections.
I won't stand in the way of that, Your Honor. If everything else is swept away, as in the Sandy Ridge case, where the judge noted all of the claims mm-hmm. had been walked away from, then I think we would have a final issue as to mm-hmm. 1110A,
right.
Which I guess would take us quicker than I expected to the merits,
right.
Your Honor. And a couple of things about the merits. One, Judge Weedoff got it exactly right. He said this was a windfall to the creditors of the estate. There was uncontroverted evidence that in the frenzy of the 60-day 1110 election period, when 460 aircraft had to be scrutinized tail by tail, that the debtor made a mistake with respect to three of these aircraft, believed there was no arrearage due, and therefore made an 1110A election pursuant to the order giving us authority to do so on February 7, 2003. We were not aware of that mistake at the time. When we became aware of it, we let U.S. Bank know that that was not a sum we were prepared to pay. This is not a contract. An 1110A, it's been referred to as an agreement, but it's not an agreement. It's an election. It's a unilateral election by a debtor where it agrees that it will take on the obligations of the contract pending ultimate assumption or rejection of that aircraft lease.
Does U.S. Bank have liens on any other aircraft of the United?
U.S. Bank is the indenture trustee on a number of transactions, probably approaching 100 aircraft. But they are in a legal capacity as trustees in those transactions. They represent beneficial holders who have the actual economic interest. But clearly here there was a unilateral decision by United. There was absolutely no reliance by U.S. Bank. And this was not up to them, and they took no actions on account of the election. In fact, they were aware, the record is clear, that United didn't make the immediate payment it was supposed to make on Feb 7, 2003 in order to cure the arrearage, which is what 1110A requires. It's both the cure the arrearage, and reassure, as we call it, that you will perform the contract going forward according to its terms, pending assumption or rejection. U.S. Bank knew on February 8th that they had not received the $6 million in question, and at that point, since we had not met the conditions of an 1110A election, the automatic stay was dissolved as to those aircraft, and U.S. Bank was free at that moment in time to exercise their remedies of repossession. That's the gift 1110A confers on aircraft financiers. They had that in their possession on February 8th. They chose not to exercise it. That was their choice, and we're pleased that they...
Well, what could they do? I mean, is repossession actually feasible? I mean, suppose someone now has a plane, and, you know, it's painted in United Airlines colors and so on. They repossess it. What are they going to do with it?
Well, 1110A was designed...
Realistically.
1110A was designed to preserve that very right for financiers.
Is this sort of bluffing? You know, they say, oh, we're going to take your plane away, and you say, oh... It's not worth anything to you, but it's worth a lot to us.
That depends on the market.
Is that what happens in these
That depends
situations?
On the market. If you don't exercise your 1110A rights in an up market and there's a plane that's got value, yes, it's very likely that it'll be repossessed. If the desert is blooming with aircraft, it may be that they'll elect not to take their plane back and rather try and negotiate some
Isn't
modification
that the
of terms.
Situation now?
That is a situation with regard to United's entire finance fleet. We're completed with about two-thirds of that process, and there's one-third that's still an issue. We've also given back aircraft, including one of the three aircraft at issue here, and, in fact, one of the other two aircraft is slated.
How much is United's fleet shrinking?
The fleet
Did you
plan...
You started with 460?
Well, 460 was financed. There were about 100 that were owned free and clear, at least pre-bankruptcy. They now... Encumber or secure the dip right. loan that United has. The fleet plan evolves based on demand. We're smaller than we were when we came in, and recently we've gotten a little bit smaller still. But I think 455 or 460 is the total financed fleet and owned free and clear fleet we hope to have at the end of this process. But in any event, the cases that were cited by U.S. Bank were mostly pre-Pioneer cases. And we all know that in Pioneer, the Supreme Court loosened the standard for excusable neglect and broadened the topics in which excusable neglect can be employed as a basis for getting out of a mistake. You leave your wallet in the cab and the taxi driver has it. That's a mistake. You get to get it back. We think that it's clear that Judge Weedoff was correct that this situation was a product of an innocent mistake. There was no detrimental reliance by U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank was aware of the mistake almost instantaneously. They waited for the next payment date to come in May, and when United didn't make that payment, then they chose to come in and try to enforce their rights and remedies. But again, so we think it's a clear merits case. Obviously, the district court did not pass on the merits, and we recognize that it's pretty extraordinary for the circuit court to take up the merits where the district court has chosen not to do so. And I would also note that we had a cross appeal because we do believe that our 1110A election was never effective in the first place, never got out of the box because of our failure to cure
it. Why is that a cross appeal? You're not asking for a modification of the judgment, are you?
We're not asking for a modification of the judgment.
You're defending it on another ground, aren't you?
That was a manner of defending the result on another ground, yes. But the truth is, when the briefing schedule was set here, there was no briefing schedule set for our cross appeal. So having the district court take up the merits only of the appeal and not of the cross appeal is something that would concern us. Of course, if we knew how the court would rule on the appeal, we might be able to respond to that more intelligently. We only note that it is exceptional circumstances under the AAR case for the Seventh Circuit to take this up at this point in time. Mm-hmm. I don't believe I have any other...
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Kugelstein. Mr. Bryant, does he have any time left? Okay, well, we'll give you a minute if you have anything further you'd like to say.
Just quickly, as to, I want to clarify any misunderstanding. I wasn't waiving any potential claims that U.S. Bank may have. What I said is, at the moment, there are no other claims, or may well be in the future.
What do you mean there may well be in the future?
Well, like, as with anybody else, at least one of the airplanes is still flying, still being flown by United Airlines. Who knows what will happen? There are thousands of people who deal with United Airlines. Anybody could end up with a claim. If I lose my baggage, if I were to choose to take
right, but that would be a claim unrelated to the this question of disaffirmance, right?
And my statement and my argument, which I stand by, was that the claim for these damages, if that's the correct term, under Section 1110. Is fixed and is not going to be changed. That doesn't mean there won't be additional claims related to these aircraft or these leases. And I was not waiving any such claims.
Okay.
I thank the court for the additional minute.
Thank you very much to both counsel. Next case for our